IsraelSin.com. Here we are with Yitzhak Chayutman. We've interviewed Yitzhak before, and his interviews are on our in our archives. This is IsraelSin.com. And recently, Yitzhak has published a book, and I would like Yitzhak to tell us about his book.
It's called The Truth About Judas. Subtitles, Mysteries of the Judas Code Revealed. It is an attempt to survey the long history of a character that probably most likely was a fictitious character all along, but the character that has been the symbol of the Jew, how to derogate the Jew by the Christians, the archetype of the traitor, of the money-grabbing Jew. The occasion for writing and publishing the book came when in 2006 was published that there was found in the Egyptian desert an old Gnostic codex, that is a kind of book made of papyrus, in which it gives the so-called the Gospel of Judas, and in which Judas is portrayed not as a traitor who hated Christ and delivered him for to agony, but the other way around, as the only one of the disciples who had any clue what were the intentions of Jesus, and the one who got private tuition by Jesus about the mysteries of creation and esoteric story of the creation. The book dealt first with this discovery of that scroll or codex, how it came about, the strange history, how it appeared, disappeared, almost disintegrated, and then saved kind of the last moment before disintegration, and was rescued by a Swiss research team, and how they progressed its deciphering and publication. However, the book needed first to explain what was this Gnosticism, what was this different view of early Christianity. Then it went for an interpretation of this Gospel of Judas in a way that I think was much more profound than any other explanation that was offered, because my explanation was based on a parallel system to Gnosticism, something that was called by some researchers Jewish Gnosticism, that is the Kabbalah. So a major figure that appears in this gospel is identified with the Tetragrammaton. And once it's like this, you see that the message, esoteric message of the book, of the newly found gospel, is against the theory of the Trinity and a theory of the four, of the quaternary, the holy quaternary. Something that was also in our time was requested or suggested by Jung, the psychologist. Yeah, the character is called Barbello, and he appears there as the creator. And there have been several explanations during the research in the last decades. What this Barbello? Is it male or female? Is it an idol? So I have explained Barbello in terms of a Hebrew expression, which say Be'arba Elu, with these four. an eminent scholar, Professor Moshe Idel, concurred with me that this explanation is as good as any other that was offered. Okay, in a Hebrew translation, the world, the universe, is actually made from the name of the Lord. This name that devout Jews just say Yud Kei, Vav Kei, and whereas Christians say Jehovah and Rastafarians say Jah, Yud Hei, Vav Hei, or Shem Havaya, the name of being, is made of four letters which are three, because they are Yud, He, and Vav. Yud is the tenth letter, He is the fifth letter, Vav is the sixth letter, and then the name repeats the He once more. So you can say it's a name of three, or of three letters, or you can say it's a name of four letters. Generally, it's called Greek name for it is tetragrammaton, the name of the four. So by showing the Jesus as teaching about Yud Hei Vav Hei, something that incidentally resurfaced during the Renaissance in circles of Christian Kabbalah, we've managed to bring it into a context of Kabbalah scholarship and understanding, and brought the message of the Judah, of Yehuda, probably to a more credible or intriguing place, because Yehuda is the name Jew, or Jewish, Yehudi, actually come from Judah. This was a way that it was used to derogate by creating this character called Judas, because most Christians have no inclination whatsoever that Jesus might have been a Jew. Most Christians, if I would mention to them this, especially in places like South America and so, they will want to kill me for suggesting such a terrible blasphemy, as if Jesus could have been a Jew. But surely he was a Jew, and all the 12 disciples were Jewish, and most likely at least three of the four who wrote the Gospels were Jews. And as the controversial Bishop Spong shows, that even the canonical Gospels, the accepted ones, are Jewish documents through and through, even though they were reshaped through conflict with mainline Judaism. So they started and developed this character of Judah as a derogation of Judaism. However, the true context of Jesus and his message and his role and his mission was within Judaism and was among Jewish people. His message also to his disciples, go and preach in the towns of the Jews, do not enter others, you are only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Okay, this Gnostic text, which is from the 2nd century, or copied from documents of the 2nd century, is not by then Jewish, but the tradition that it's based on are. So it can be, actually the argument I made in this book has been made in research quite a lot about the question of relationship of Gnosis and Kabbalah. That while, let's say, 60 years ago, the prevalent idea was that there was Gnosis, and somehow after it died, it had some kind of strange resurrection many centuries later and resurrected as a Kabbalah. That was a view of the eminent scholar Gershom Shalom. By now, research tends to see it the other way around, that Gnosis was the result of Jewish esoteric beliefs and was a result of Judaism, and not, at the time it was esoteric Judaism was not called Kabbalah, had other names, but that the development of the Kabbalah was a continuous and legitimate development within the Jews. Anyway, the book that I wrote didn't stop at those pastimes. It gave a survey about the Kabbalah because the main suggestion was that this gospel has valid criticism of Christianity, but you cannot do much with it on the basis of the old gnosis alone. To explain about the criticism, it actually, in this book, Jesus addresses his disciples, the people who built the church, and calls them murderers, fornicators, those who use his name for exactly the opposite of what he meant, in the most horrible terms. And this is the church. The church that was established is criticized in this old document as a travesty of what Jesus wanted. And the only character who was true to Jesus was Judas Iscariot, not a traitor, but the dear disciple. So I followed the development of the Kabbalah. What could you get from it nowadays if you adopted such a perspective? I've mentioned first Jung, who son of a Protestant pastor, who was trying to reform Christianity in along psychological spiritual insights. But I have followed a few other modern writers that explored this theme of Judas, of the traitor or not the traitor. I've shown the masterly work of Borges, who in his very short essays or fantastic stories explored the theme of the hero and the traitor, up to his masterly story of the three versions of Judas, about a Swedish pastor who is tormented by the idea, what's the meaning of all this story in the Gospels about Judas? It doesn't make sense for him. And as he explores it in dead seriousness, he eventually comes to the conclusion that's the only Son of God that was sent to earth to suffer the suffering for the sake of humankind was not Jesus but Judas. That and in a sense he didn't make it, but the idea that the Jews who kept on suffering because of this burden, they have been suffering for the sake of all humankind, and bearing the burden of the cruelty of man to man. So this was Borges in his masterly work. But I've also enlisted a master science fiction writer, Jose Philip Farmer, who wrote a series of short stories about Father to the Stars, about the religion and interfaith relationships blown up to the whole galaxy. And he has a novel called The Night of Light that shows a certain Catholic bishop who goes to some faraway star where a new idol is about to emerge. And eventually he realizes that his sacred role is to betray the Roman Church and become himself a Judas and stop the spread of Catholicism in the galaxy. So that was another story. But then I started developing one theme from the book as it projects to the future. And this is the theme of the clouds in which the image of celestial beings appear. This is an element that appears a lot in the in this old Gospel of Judas. And I've shown that this is the way that the future temple of Jerusalem is envisaged. as a permanently secured cloud over the Temple Mount, which incidentally is the very place that those visions discussed in the old codex are being shown. So I show that something like that, this is like a prophecy for the future, because nowadays we can build an installation, a facility, which would hold a cloud permanently over the Temple Mount, on which there can be, by holographic projections or other means, appear all sorts of images, tzlamim, which portrays the state of humankind or the spiritual state of humankind, the over-self or over-soul of all humankind, if you like. And that this finding of the ancient codex that was hidden for so many centuries is a sign for our times to adopt such an attitude. So the final chapter in the book deals with the Dome of the Rock and with the future temple of Jerusalem. And it shows the Dome of the Rock as a Gnostic, Kabbalistic type of structure, laden with all the meanings, proportions, sacred geometry, and especially a space where such visions can take place. But along with the what is possible by modern technology of setting up a permanent cloud over the mountain, Anan Kavod, the clouds of glory. Because, and for Christians, born-again Christians or others, my recommendation was to adopt this strange, unorthodox view, because that was the one view that may allow them to see what they hope to see, which is this prophecy of the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven. Here, this ancient scroll pointed at contemporary technology, which may allow this vision to happen.
I'd like to go back for a moment to the we know that the Trinity is considered is designated as the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So I was trying to understand, what was the quatrinity? Are there four elements like earth, air, fire, and water, or are there four characters, or how is that manifested?
Well, one trouble, let's say, with the Trinity is that it is literally homosexual. It's all male. Even the Holy Spirit is a male character, let alone the Father and the Son. And this means that the religion based on it has a very strong paternalistic or masculine bias, and not a recognized place for the feminine. The feminine did emerge and kind of forced itself. The ascent of the Virgin, for instance, was something that came by popular cult and made its way into the accepted Roman Catholic. It's a fascinating history of the Church in this. But the quaternary that is dealt with in Judaism, in the Kabbalah, is based, as I mentioned, on the four-letter name, where the Yod represents father figure, which is also the quality or the sphira of wisdom, of Chochmah. Then there is a character of the mother, represented by this He, by this more containing letter. Then the son character is Vav of the four-letter name, and the sphira, the quality of splendor of Tiferet. And then there is also the character of the daughter, who is represented by the last letter, He, of the holy name, of the holy quaternary, the Tetragrammaton. So here we have a system of the Godhead, a four-way system, in which is evenly balanced of the masculine and the feminine. Two masculine persons and two feminine persons in the Godhead. So this is an indication of a balance which is missing in Orthodox Christianity.
Do you have an opinion on the reality, or did you voice an opinion on whether this character called Judas existed or didn't exist, or does it matter?
To my great disappointment, I came only after the book was published, I came upon a work of a very controversial Anglican bishop called Spong from New Jersey, who in his book called Liberating the Gospels, which shows the gospel, as I mentioned, as Jewish documents, he has a small chapter there about about Judas. And he shows how this character grew from one gospel to the other. There are ways the gospels, the dates of writing the gospels are more or less agreed among all the multitudes of scholars of New Testament. And he shows that this demonization of Judas and the demonization of the Jews in the Gospels was a gradual process in which each one built upon the other and added more. And in fact, he shows that from the very beginning, mentioning of this character, they are unreasonable or unlikely things about him, suggesting also the way of composing the Gospels. Spong shows that they use Jewish themes and what he would call mythology to show Jesus like the Abraham or like Moses or like Elijah or like Elisha in all the kind of stories of miracles. So, and the character of Judas is also built by such building on archetypes or characters in the Old Testament that just borrow all the cases of betrayal and selling somebody. And so, and they have drawn, pulled out all these elements and put them on this one character more and more at each further edition of the gospel. Myself, when I wrote the book, I assumed there must have been such a character and interpreted his name in several ways. One of them was, of course, it's a name Judas, Yehuda, does include in itself all the letters of the tetragrammaton. It's those four letters plus the letter Dalet, which means poverty. So the name already indicated that he had more intimate knowledge of the tetragrammaton and of the Lord than all the other disciples. But of course, this line of reasoning is also valid when you consider him as a mythological character.
Two questions, Yitzchak. One is, do you have another book you're working on, or what it is you're working on at present? And the other is where people can find this book.
The book that I've been working on now for about 15 years is just an explanation about the book of Genesis, the first book of the Bible, or so-called Old Testament, Pentateuch. What I show in this book in painstaking detail is that this book need not be read as a past history, but can equally validly be read as a future prophecy. That actually people never notice that the peculiar way in which the Hebrew is written in the scriptures, which inverts the tenses. That whatever seems to be written as a prophecy is written in past tense, and whatever seems to be history is written in future tense, and it's inverted by this letter Vav, but its inversion doesn't, just giving it a name, the Vav of inversion, doesn't explain anything. But it's a device for making the text super temporal, let's call it. There is a pattern. in the book, my attempt was mainly to look at it holistically, to look at it not as a Jewish interpretation of Genesis, not Christian or Muslim, all of them. On one hand, I do bring those various interpretations and a lot of Kabbalah interpretations, but what I show is that these interpretations of the text, in a sense, were intended, that the text is not a closed text, but was intentionally an open text to bring out all these instances and all these attempts to realize its meaning, its moral. That the development of Islam and Christianity, even though it looks like so happenstance and circumstantial, still it's very natural that there would grow such interpretations, and that all of them are partial interpretations that have been going on and are going on till the present. That the mission of the book is to create an entity that it's called Israel, which is a representative of all of humankind. It's the essence of all humankind. It's not a Jewish thing, and not exclusively Jewish thing. It's not exclusively a Christian thing. It's a collection of 12 chosen peoples. It's the idea is that this feeling of chosenness is not a pathology. It's not something that should be exterminated so the Jews can live normally with other people, which makes sense for many people. But it's this inner feeling of the soul for choosing and being chosen that needs to be appreciated. The pattern that the book holds right from the first chapter, there is a pattern of creation in 6 stages, which then brings automatically almost to a 7th one of perfection. And the same pattern then goes through the whole narrative of the book about the relationships of brothers. The book shows that all mankind are brothers. They're all issue from one source. But still, the sad truth is that brothers can fight, brothers can kill each other or drive away the other one. So in fact, the book of Genesis has 6 stages of the conflict and relationship among brothers. And from one stage to another, there is some improvement. The danger is less and less. There is less killing. There is more tolerance. There is, in the end, mutual appreciation. Till in the next book comes the 7th stage of the 2 brothers, Moses and Aaron, who, while even they have conflicts sometimes, can work together for the grace of the Lord and for the divine mission on earth without frictions. So first Cain and Abel, then the sons of Noah, then Isaac and Ishmael, and incidentally there are 6 more sons of Abraham, which are not being paid attention to, but are expounded on this book. Then Esau and Jacob, then Joseph and his brothers, especially Joseph and Judah, then Menashe and Ephraim. There are 6 stages of relationship among brothers that, and it shows how a world of amity, I would call it, a world of love is gradually established within a world that is cruel and trying and based on competition and ego.
Where is the book about Judith, the name of the book, and where it's available?
Well, right now it's in some, I won't say godforsaken, but quite a marginal place in the internet. Look for the name The Hope, Hatikva. It's www.thehope.org. And then, but then carry on and write index.htm or welcome.html, because you won't find it straight on. I haven't paid for the last years for the maintenance of the page.
Thank you very much, Yitzchak. We look forward to talking to you again when the book on the Bereshit Genesis is closer to finished or finished and published. And in the meantime, thank you again. This has been Yoram from IsraelScene.com.